Hello and welcome to the Banker podcast series, Banking in Transition, where we explore how banking has changed through the COVID-19 pandemic and is adapting for the future. In this series, the Banker's editors are interviewing industry experts from around the world to gather insights and advice on specific challenges, best practices, and innovations that can help banks and their customers as we move towards a new normal in banking. I'm Kimberly Long, Asia Editor at The Banker, and today I'm speaking with Peter Bourne, Chief Representative in Mumbai for Commerzbank. Thanks for joining us today, Peter.
It's a pleasure. Thank you very much, Kimberly, for inviting me to this podcast series.
So to begin with, you know, we all know India had some real severe challenges in the pandemic, not least with the surge of cases during the spring caused by the Delta variant. How is the country's economy recovering from these setbacks?
Yes, indeed, Kimberly. India was facing huge challenges during this pandemic, and the recession was really deep. First, the harsh lockdown in the beginning of the pandemic. Just imagine locking up 1.3 billion people for nearly 3 months in their homes. Yeah, and in India, we speak often of huts, as well as bringing commerce and industry to a complete standstill. Consequently, India's GDP dropped dramatically by 27.6% in the second quarter of last year, and the country fell from the fifth position back to the seventh position in the ranking of the world's largest economies. And the second shock for the country was in spring when the newly discovered COVID Delta variant took, unfortunately, so many lives. This health crisis in spring was, as the WTO expressed, beyond heartbreaking. And we all remember the terrible pictures and reports in the international press. Meanwhile, I'm happy to report that the circumstances have changed. The situation is at the moment well under control. More than 1.1 billion vaccination doses have been applied, which of course is not enough, but it seems to have stopped the emerging of a third wave, touch wood. Coming to the economy, most economic indicators, including the stock markets, which are climbing from record high to record high, are currently pointing to a bounce back. Also, strong foreign exchange reserves of a comfortable $640 billion, meanwhile the fourth largest worldwide, are protecting the country from potential external shocks. Also, the Indian banking sector, which showed excellent results over the last two quarters, managed the pandemic-related stress fairly well. Banks were able to increase their capital substantially during the last 12 months in order to build up buffers for potential loan losses. Looking ahead, for this financial year, all economic pundits like the international rating agencies, World Bank, IMF, etc., are expecting India's GDP to grow between 8 and 10%, which would be one of the highest worldwide for a large economy. The predictions for the coming years are about 6 to 7%. I'm sure that India will regain its position as fifth largest economy soon, a fact which is often overlooked by international corporates and organizations because the country is generally considered difficult to do business with. On the other hand, I feel an emerging economy of this scale, which contributes to 7% to world growth and which offers a wide spectrum of business opportunities in the years to come, should not be ignored. Finally, let me add one thing which I noticed based on the trade business Commerzbank has received over the last months. I meanwhile strongly believe that we are at the beginning of a new CapEx cycle here in India, which will soon see more investments in key sectors like infrastructure, healthcare, education, and engineering. The last CapEx cycle ended more than 10 years ago, and with the rapid developments since then, new capacities are required, creating a fresh demand for investments in capital goods.
And India holds a really significant role in the global supply chain routes, yet the country decided to opt out of RCEP. How is India looking to position itself in the international trade network without being part of these, you know, huge group networks between countries?
Yeah, does India really have a strong role in global supply chain routes? Considering the size of the economy, I would rather say no. There are, of course, a few exceptions. For example, the gemstones, particularly the diamond business, yeah, pharmaceuticals and IT. And there are historic reasons for it, Kimberly. For decades after independence, India followed a policy of import substitution, state-led industrialization and protectionism. Trade and industrial policies are, and I would say still today, domestic market-oriented. It is therefore no surprise that India's integration into global value chains remained underdeveloped and largely untapped. Since the country is not sufficiently exposed to international competition, studies have also shown that India would not automatically profit from free trade agreements. It's rather a win-lose situation for India, which would open its huge domestic market without gaining much in return. And in this context, we have to understand why India backed out from the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, RCEP, a free trade zone agreement signed last year by 15 Asia-Pacific countries. On the other hand, the Indian government knows very well, in the long run, protectionism can't be the solution. But it also realizes that most of its companies need more time to strengthen their international competitiveness. How to achieve this? Domestically, the government has to continue its course of liberalization, creating a robust infrastructure to reform the legal system so that companies find a better environment to grow. Parallel to this, open up the markets to foreign competition by signing free trade and foreign investment agreements, preferably with countries and regions where imports and exports are balanced. And these are the US, UK, Australia, New Zealand, and the European Union. At the end, it's a balancing act between lifting protectionist policies, encouraging foreign competition, and at the same time strengthening domestic manufacturing and export capabilities. India is, in my opinion, at a turning point, and the next 10 years will be very interesting. I'm absolutely convinced that India will go through its transformation with perhaps which will perhaps take more time than in other countries because India is large and very diverse, as you know, and a democracy where a government has to compromise to bring many interests under one umbrella. However, the present government, which is stable and reform-oriented, seems to be committed to integrating India into global value change. They know that a focus on exports has worked wonders decades ago for Japan, Thailand, Taiwan, Korea, and the South Asian tigers. A recent success story is neighboring Bangladesh, which currently has a higher per capita income than India itself. By the way, exports are doing well at the moment, and the country is on track achieving a historic record this year as far as exports is concerned. Let me mention one more interesting aspect. When we talk about trade and supply chains, we usually mean goods and forget the services. India has excellent IT companies and abundant, well-educated software engineers, which are ready to deliver what the world needs for its global transformation. Only last week, India's Commerce Minister mentioned that India could scale up its services exports to $1 trillion by 2030 through leveraging its advantages in IT, education, technology-based healthcare, as well as management and business services.
And looking more closely to home now for India, the SME and the MSME segments are a huge part of India's economy. How are these essential small businesses being supported throughout the pandemic and everything else that has been thrown at the country recently?
Yeah. as in many other countries, SME and MSME form the core of the economy, also here in India, contributing to 38% of GDP. And what is very important, employing tens of millions of people. In a democracy like India, no politician can ignore SMEs and MSMEs. And therefore, a lot of direct support was directly given during the peak of the pandemic. One should not underestimate also the size of the informal, unregulated MSME sector here in India, which is not even covered by GDP calculations. And the challenge for any government is to bring this, also this segment, into the better regulated formal sector. Only a well-regulated, skilled SME sector would be the cradle for the government's Make in India vision, which means substantially increasing production capacities and creating employment on a massive scale. This would be the nursery where small businesses existing today have the potential to become noteworthy exporters of tomorrow, attracting also partners with technology and funds. There are two important factors to transform these large SME sector. First, of course, upskilling to fill the lack of qualified workers and to improve the product quality. And secondly, removing bureaucratic hurdles and make doing business easier for SMEs. This will increase efficiencies and unleash the famous Indian entrepreneurial spirit, as well as the abundant capital which is available in the country. The old comparison of setting free the caged Indian tiger comes to my mind in this connection. The Indian banking sector, as I see it, is ready and keen to play a crucial role in this transformation process. And India's macro, small and medium enterprises will no doubt be the game changers in strengthening India's domestic manufacturing as well as export capabilities.
That's great. Thank you so much for joining us today, Peter.
Yeah, thank you very much, Kimberly.
And you can keep up to date by subscribing to our weekly podcasts on iTunes, Spotify and Acast, and follow our discussions at thebanker.com/podcasts.
The latest episode of The Next Five podcast is all about health prevention and vaccines. I speak to Kate Hashey at GSK.
For every dollar invested in improving health, there's an economic return of $2 to $4.
Murray Aitken at IQVIA Institute for Human Data Science.
The benefits of adult vaccination are compelling.
And David Sinclair at the International Longevity Centre.
Preventable conditions amongst those aged 50 to 64 in the UK cost $27 billion a year.
Listen to the full episode of The Next Five wherever you get your podcasts.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.